And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Welcome.
How you doing, John?
Good. Thanks, Tom. Nice to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you, too.
Is that a vault behind you?
Yeah, it's a Canon safe.
Oh, okay.
We're in my office. Yeah, we're in my office.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. I was gonna say, because if you're in a bank, there actually is in I think it's Wappingers, there's a bank that has a podcast studio in it.
Okay.
But it's in a giant vault. And I went and looked at it to do the show from there, and I'm like, I just would be too nervous sitting in a vault for like 2.5 hours at a pop, right?
I understand that.
Oh, man. So we got put together by Doug and Victoria, right?
Yep.
Doug and Victoria. They're letting me do the show from there. So I just had a studio there that I took today. So I'm super excited about that.
That's great.
Yeah, shout out to them. They are really super nice people, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. All right, so let's do you. 2002, you were doing what?
2002, I was teaching at John Jay. I was a physical educator there, and that's what I was doing, basically. I had one dog I was working with, and I was coaching quite a bit, and that's where I was.
When you say working with, do you train dogs or do you?
Yeah, I got into it after I retired, or about the same time as I retired in 2005, and I've been kind of doing it for the last 20 years.
I'm going to have questions before we go. we adopted a dog who was feral and had never seen the inside of a house before, and was just, for 3 weeks, just wouldn't come out of the corner. And but now we've had her, I want to say, 4 years. And she's just become this giant love pillow all the time.
They adapt way better than humans.
They do, right?
They do.
All right. First question. You have to pick. Dog or a person? What do you pick?
Dog.
You didn't need to think about that.
No, didn't even have to think about it. You know, here's the thing. They always give you 100%.
Mm-hmm.
They treat you the way you treat them.
Mm-hmm.
There's never any errors. You know exactly what you have, and they will die for you doing what they need to do.
Yeah.
Those are traits that every human should have, and we don't.
You're 100% right. I've put down 3 dogs in my life. Four dogs so far. I've always had a dog, but I put down four. But I have a crazy story about that, and I wanted to tell it to you because I wanted to see what you think of it. I had one dog. I used to work at a shelter, and one day I walk in, volunteer. I didn't work there. I walk in, and I said, just give me the worst of what we have, and they gave me this Doberman, German Shepherd, Rottweiler mix, run to the litter, eyes still closed, and said, he's not gonna get through the day. And I thought, okay, well, or the night rather. And I thought, okay, well, he should die. If that's the case, he should die feeling a heartbeat, so he's not dying alone. So I brought him home, and I had a Lazy Boy recliner, and I put on X-Files. That's how long ago this was. And put the dog on my chest and fell asleep. Woke up the next morning. Dog was still alive. And dog looks at me. And the first thing I think it sees, besides maybe the X-Files, and this dog and I are boom, we're just bonding. And for 19 years, this dog did everything together, and dog was on my hip. I would drive a Jeep with no doors, would park the Jeep in town. Dog would stay in the Jeep, wouldn't move. Just an amazing dog. So now it's 19 years later, and it's time. So we go to the vet, and the vet's office was in a house, and we did, and they were great about it. That's one of the hardest things to do in life. And I was doing good until I got, not good, but I got outside the door of the vet, and I sat on a stoop and put my elbow on my knees and was just crying my eyes out. I get up, I get in the car, I drive like 10 minutes, and I'm crying so hard, I'm like, I'm going to hit something. So I pull over, and I call my wife. My wife is a third grade teacher, and in her room is a teacher's aide with her. And I'm like, we did it, it's over, blah, blah, blah. And then the teacher aide says, tell John that they tell you they're okay within an hour. And I'm like, okay, that sounds like something you would say to, say to somebody. It's a cute thing to say to make me feel better, right? I get it. So I get in a car, drive a little bit further. I had to pull over again because I'm crying so hard. I look outside my driver's side window, and there's a Samoyed sitting by the door. I open the driver door. Samoyed leaps in the car, goes and sits in the passenger seat where Tucker always sat, and just started staring at me. And I called the thing on his tag, and the owner's like, oh my God, he's never gotten away before. They live right around the corner. Can I come get him? I'm like, absolutely. But I'm like, wow, that's a freaky story.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you quick, because I don't know how much time we have, but I don't waste your time either.
We have hours. We're long form.
Meg passed away. Judy went out in the Aaron yard, and all the dogs were out there. I had three others at the time, and a monarch butterfly appeared. And it went in the yard, sat by Judy, and opened its wings. So Judy ran in the house quick, got in the computer, and basically in American Indian culture, when a monarch butterfly appears, it symbolizes rebirth and resurgence, and good things are coming on the horizon.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we kind of said that was Meg coming back.
Sure.
About three months after that, I'm at a shoot at Mid-Hudson Sporting Clays. And I go up, and I put my gun to the hold point, and a monarch butterfly comes and lands on the barrel.
Stop it. Lands
right on the barrel, turns and looks right at me.
Oh, my God.
So.
So you're a believer.
I sure am.
Beautiful.
I absolutely am. And here's one more. About a month after Meg passed, I got a call from a gentleman up in Binghamton, New York. He's a professional trainer, and I'll tell you a story about that later. And he said, Tom, I just heard that Meg passed. He says, I have a litter of Britneys on the ground. Come and pick out one.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know if I was ready after that, but a friend of mine I had to take up to Cornell. Her dog was sick, and I had to go there. But on the way back, I stopped, saw the pups, and I picked out one. Well, this pup has more of Meg's traits than Meg does. She does things that Meg always did, and none of my other dogs do. If this dog is, we'd let all the dogs to go outside, all three of them run outside, this one comes in my office, finds me. Won't go outside until she finds me. Meg used to jump up on my lap and stare at the computer for hours. This one jumps up on my lap and stares at the computer. This one is Meg in different clothes. So I am definitely a believer.
That's amazing.
Definitely.
All right, let's catch people up on who Meg is and what this is then. So 2002, you're teaching, you're training dogs, and you start losing people.
Yeah, 2002, 2003, I lost my mom, my dad, my sister in 18 months, all gone, all to cancer. So I was still teaching at the time. It was a pretty rough time for me. And basically what happened is a friend asked me to shoot some sporting clays. I got into the sporting clays. I started getting certified to teach it, because teaching was my my game my whole life. I got some dogs. Went to Kansas to get a Brittany because I followed the breeding. And that dog had litter, and Meg came out of that litter. So when I had the litter, the same gentleman who gave me the dog up in Binghamton, New York, wanted a dog for his father. So he called me and he said, listen, Tom, he said, how about we trade out some training time for a pup? And I said, fine, let's do it. So when Meg was about 8-9 months, I sent her up. Oh, a month, month and a half, 2 months goes by, and he calls me up. He said, well, Tom, you got to come and get Meg. I said, really? What's up? He said, she's a washout. She's not big enough. She's not retrieving. She's too small. I just think get rid of her, make her a pet, and get yourself a real dog. So I was pretty crushed. I went up, and my wife and I went up, and on the way back from that visit, when I picked up Meg, there was silence in the car. There wasn't a radio on. There was nothing. I didn't want to talk to anybody, period. And my wife turned and said to me, you know, that man is full of shit. And I turned to her and I said, and what the F do you know about dog training? And she turned to me and said, I don't know anything about dog training, but I know behavior. I can see the way that dog looks at you. Get her home, make her your own, you'll have no issues. And damned if she wasn't right. Meg went on to become an AKC master hunter. Meg never finished less than third in any chuck she ever entered. She won 3 years in a row at Pleasant Valley Farms in Robesonia, Pennsylvania. She was on print advertising for Macy's, Lord & Taylor, Dillard's, Ralph Lauren. She did a commercial for Regeneron for monoclonal antibodies. And she was on the cover of NAVDA Monthly magazine. So she became everything you want a dog after basically being told she was a nobody. So it was a pretty special trip, and Meg was my heart and soul. I had three or four other dogs at the time, and my buddy used to tell me that you don't have three or four dogs, you really only have one. The other ones are just living there. Right. That kind of was the truth, because Meg was my heart and soul. So in 2019, Meg got cancer, mammary cancer. We had it removed. And I had to get her checked every once in a while, every 2 to 3 months, to make sure it didn't spread. 2021, we found a spot on her lung. And I took her, got a hold of a veterinarian oncologist by the name of Lindsay Thalheim from Cornell. Lindsay and I have now become very, very close. And actually, people call her my adopted daughter. Excuse me.
No worries.
We had her lower lobe, the caudal lobe of her right lung removed. And we monitored. Long story short, over the next year and a half to 2 years, we found another spot. This one was on a kidney. We did a bunch of different things. But through that experience, I was finding, doing research, that the drugs they were treating Meg with were two drugs called vincristine and doxorubicin. One was developed in 1963, and the other was developed in 1969. I was getting my dog treated with 50-year-old drugs. And I was from the point that I was, you know, every time you turn on the TV, you'd see a new drug for treating human cancers every time, but yet nothing for the canine end of the universe. So in 2021, before Meg passed, we had a shoot for Canine Cancer. And very honestly, nobody wants to talk about two things, guns and cancer. So I have to say to you, thank you so much, kind of, for having the courage to bring me on, because nobody wants to talk about it. And as soon as you mention guns, they go in a different direction.
Yeah.
And over the past year, I did a little survey. It was unscientific. And at Mid-Hudson Sporting Clays in New Paltz, New York, over the last year, well over $3 million has been raised by the people who shoot. And it's been for veterans, it's been for disabled veterans, it's been for cancer, it's been from diabetes, it's been Down syndrome. So the people who pull the trigger and shoot and hunt and target practice, they do more good in the world. And we kind of get dumped on for having that gun in our hand, but we do so much good.
Yeah.
So this shoot, over the past 4 years, and originally it was developed with the TUNAVDA, North American Versatile Hunting Dog Association, clubs in the area. They helped me for the first 4 years. And in this 3 years, they also helped last year. And for the last year and a half now, the reins are being taken over by the Federation of Dutchess County Fish and Game Clubs and the Conservation Awareness Foundation. And over the last 4 years, for the benefit of the Riney Canine Health Center at Cornell University and the Cornell Veterinary Hospital in Stamford, Connecticut, we've raised close to $300,000.
Wow.
Towards canine cancer research. And Meg has been the... Her legacy is to help every other dog and every other person. And we have a mantra. And the mantra is, from the love of one little dog. And Meg, her legacy will be to help every dog and every human fight this terrible disease. And it's very tough for me to talk about this, but
yeah, no, I get it. My wife had a neck cancer, and it was a 2 year journey, and it was really dramatic. She got Newsweek covered it, the Today Show covered it. I mean, her walk was really rough. She's been good now, coming on 2 years. I still can't talk about it without crying. So I totally get it, man.
Yeah.
I totally get it. So walk me through what a... okay. I've never fired... I would. I just never had the opportunity to fire a gun before in my life. So the event is... So I've obviously never been to a shoot before. So can you just walk people through what the event is?
Sure. It's a Sporting Clays event, and Sporting Clay basically is a round target. It's orange, black, multicolor sometimes. They come out of a trap machine. They go at different angles. And originally it was designed to replicate game, replicate birds flying. It has evolved to way more than that. The way these targets come out of these machines, no bird has ever flown. But it's for people who don't like to hunt, but they can still shoot a firearm and achieve some degree of satisfaction and enjoyment.
Yeah.
It's for people who do both, who hunt and shoot clays. But the event basically is 100 targets. Shooters rotate between 17 stations. We have two 17 station courses, and you shoot either the Brittany course or the Labrador course. And they'll go around, shoot 100 targets. We have a hot breakfast for everybody in the morning. We have lobster and beef for lunch. It's beyond reproach. It's the best you could ever do. We have multiple raffles. Our auction is close to $80,000 in items.
And wow. Auction
items, everything from trips to firearms to spa packages to all kinds of things. And at the end of the day, we want to give shooters who come way more than they paid for. So when they come, they walk out saying, "This was probably the best event I've ever been associated with."
Give me the date and the time, and then we'll say it a couple times. But what's the date and what time is it, and where is it?
21st, 2025. We have actually this year is a 3-day event. The first day is Friday evening at the Hudson House Distillery. We have a party from 6:30 to 9:30, and that's called Pause to Party, PAWS to Party. And that's basically a meet and greet with all the vets that are coming. We have a title sponsor of Purina this year. So we have the Purina people coming. And it's basically a thank you for our sponsors and for anybody that wants to come and have a great evening of food. We have a band, The Difference, are coming.
Trish.
And really enjoy the night and support what we do. Saturday is the actual shoot at Mid-Hudson Sporting Clays. And then Sunday, we have a Sporting Clays clinic at Mid-Hudson Sporting Clays. And I've got three of my fellow instructors plus myself coming in. And we're going to do a Sporting Clays clinic for anybody who would like to do it, whether it's a first-time person wanting to learn or whether it's a master class shooter that wants to improve. We've got instructors basically for every level.
So I knew about the dinner. Trish is actually a really good friend of mine, Trish and Joe. So I'm not speaking to them because they didn't ask me to come and sing with them. So, but we can hash that out later. But that sounds like a wonderful thing. Can to go to the Saturday event though, you need to be an experienced shooter.
No, you don't. You need
you to, don't. Okay.
Nope. You don't.
Do you have to shoot, or could I just come and watch and eat?
You can come and watch. You can come and have lunch. You can come just for the lobster dinner. We have people come for the lobster dinner and the auction. Because
They
know something's in that auction they really like. They'll come for the lobster dinner and lunch and that kind of thing. And very honestly, we charge $60 for lunch. And you can't get a lobster dinner with steak and lobster for $60. So,
no,
so
you can't.
Great value.
That sounds fantastic.
It's a great thing to support. The Conservation Awareness Foundation, which is our supporting entity, is a 501(c). So we do everything through them, and everything is tax deductible as opposed to per IRS regulations. But everything you do is that way too.
What do you call it when you launch? I'm so bad at this. When you launch the target, the clay. When you launch, you call what?
Word is pull.
Oh, okay.
P-U-L-L.
If you're on the course and I give you 100 pulls, how many can you hit?
Well, sporting clays is like golf. And if you're playing golf at Vassar Golf Course and you're playing golf at Pebble Beach, you're going to do a lot worse than you are at Vassar. So in a general course, the average person is going to break 50 to 60 targets.
Okay.
Maybe a little more, a little less. A good shooter is going to be in the 80s to 90s. And that's one thing about sporting clays that's different than other games out there. Sporting clays changes. You go to the next station, it's completely different than the one before.
Oh, okay.
We call it almost golf with a shotgun.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you were just standing there and somebody pulls things 100 times.
No, and
okay.
Every station is different. Every bird is different. There's some rolling on the ground. There's some straight in the air. There's some coming from behind you. Some from the left. Some from the right. Some are slow. Oh. Some are fast. It's quite a unique game.
Yeah. So how, are you in the 80s and 90s?
Yeah, well, I'm in the mid-80s most of the time. But like anything else in the universe, you have your good days and you have your bad days.
Yeah.
And some days the target setter beats you. Some days you eat the target setter.
Some days you eat the bear eats you. Some days you eat the bear. Yeah. You're retired now.
I am.
How are your eyes holding up that you can do that?
Actually, very well. Thank God for that. A year ago, almost a year ago this month, I had a aortic valve replacement.
Oh.
So basically what I say is, you know, I've got new parts now. I can do just about anything.
There you go.
That was life-changing as far as how I felt and that kind of thing.
Do you hunt?
Oh, yeah. I raise and train Brittany gun dogs. They are upland dogs. Right now I have five. Three are actively guiding, and hunting. One is in training, and one's a pet. So I will have four dogs that are in the field for next season, I hope.
Wow.
What's your favorite thing to hunt?
I'm sorry?
What's your favorite animal to hunt?
I like the small birds.
Okay.
Huns, Hungarian partridge, quail, that kind of thing. Pheasants are like B-52s taking off, though a lot of people can hit them. And chucker partridge are very slow.
I know what I wanted to ask you. You hunt turkey?
Actually, I do not.
I'm
a little OCD when it comes to sitting and shutting up. So unless I have a dog in front of me that I'm actually working and talking to and speaking to, I have a rough time sitting there and not saying a word and not moving.
Got it.
Unfortunately, deer hunting and turkey hunting really are not for me, but I have done turkey hunting, and it's a pretty exciting game. It really is. Especially if you're good at it.
The house I used to live in, it was 5 acres. It backed up against Ralph Lauren's estate, actually. And there was a local police officer who asked permission to come and hunt. And I said, sure. So we were talking, and he hunts turkeys and deer. And so I asked him, and he said turkeys are so like the smartest bird.
Oh, is yeah. That, very good yeah. eyesight, too.
Ah, that's not. All right. Well, they taste good, though.
Yes. Yes.
Do you have children?
I do. I have one daughter.
One daughter. Does she shoot?
Nope.
No?
Has no interest.
So I'm a guitar player, a musician, and I do this for money, but I do that for love. Can't get my daughter to sing or play the guitar. Killing me.
They will have other talents.
Yeah, but they I want them to do mine.
Yeah, I get you.
So the smaller birds, though, you can still eat those, right?
Well, in New York State, you can release any bird that's not a proper that's not a bird that's native to New York State. So we don't consider pheasants native to New York State anymore. Okay. So you can release pheasants, chuckers, Hungarian partridge, quail.
What do you mean by release?
Sorry?
What do you mean by release?
Well, you can put them at preserves. You know,
oh,
you
okay.
can put them out at preserves because they're not native to New York State.
Okay. What's your relationship with cancer now? Because...
Well, my relationship with cancer?
Yeah.
Well, thank God I'm not in the same boat as a lot of other people, but I'm pretty active with it almost every day. I get people calling me for all kinds of things. Because of our relationship with Cornell, I have access to the best medical care for your dog in the universe. So when people call me, they usually call me after they've been diagnosed at their local vet, and they go, what do I do? And my dog has XYZ. I ask the questions, how old is your dog? Where is your dog? What kind of dog? And from those answers, I basically get them in touch with some of the best people in the universe, whether it's at Cornell Ithaca or whether it's at Cornell Stanford. And they are the best people in the universe.
Hmm.
And because of our relationship, most of these vets and I are on a first name basis, and we can get these people help when they need it. Because most of the time, they don't know which way to turn. They have no idea.
Yeah. How do you explain, or can you explain, or can you educate me? Not explain, but can you? What's your interpretation of the relationship between dogs and people? Because they're historically, we just kind of we bred them to be friends, right? And how's that?
As far as cancer goes, the research is basically about the same. 1 in 3 dogs will get cancer in their lifetime. 1 in 4 dogs will die from cancer in a lifetime. 1 in 5 dogs will get cancer after the age of 10. So if a dog gets cancer after the age of 10, it's about 1 in 5, if they've survived to that point. As far as relationships go, There is no better relationship in the universe. And people who've never had dogs don't understand that relationship. And they don't understand it because they've never had a dog that's become part of them. And very honestly, as I said to you before, these dogs exhibit characteristics way beyond we as humans. And as I said before, if more humans had the characteristics of dogs, this world would be a hell of a lot better. And very honestly, a dog doesn't care whether you're black, white, pink, orange, whether you're gay, whether you're trans, whether you're regular, whether you're normal, whether you walk on two legs or crawl around on the floor. How you treat them is equal to how they treat you. And if you treat them lousy, they will treat you the exact same way.
Right.
And as humans, we judge people, we see people, we see a different color, we see a different relationship, and we instantly judge.
Yeah.
A dog does not judge, period.
I have a theory about the human-dog relationship. I wanted to run by it. I'm into two things, dogs and music. And I think they're the same thing. I think it's hubris for us to assume that we have a word for every emotion. We don't. Like, I could say I'm mad at my daughter. But that could mean a gazillion things, right? It could mean like I'm mad at her, but when she shows up, I'm not mad anymore. It could mean I'm mad at her and she's grounded for there's a spectrum. And I think that one of the reasons why music reaches people in the way that it does is music speaks to the spectrum. And if you're mad from 1 to 37 and you listen to the right song, it can nail your mad at 26.5. Exactly. Pinpoint. I think dogs do the same thing. I think that the music you're not so interactive with, but with dogs you are. And I think that the reason that we relate so well to dogs is they have that same ability. They can nail what you're feeling. They can nail that 26.5 exactly because they're not limited to words. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. In fact, we have a saying in the dog training and testing world. And when you test a dog, whether it be AKC or whatever you're testing them for, and you take that dog and you have them on a leash and you walk them to the line, the saying is, whatever you're feeling, better be quality and better be upbeat and better be correct. Because whatever you're feeling goes right down the leash, right to that dog. And if you're feeling apprehensive, if you're feeling tense, if you're feeling unsure, if you're feeling not confident, it will go right down to leash to that dog.
Yeah.
And I've seen it so many times that the dog will imitate your feelings, or a dog will know what your feelings are.
Right. Dogs are better communicators than people.
Absolutely. And they don't need words.
That's the point. Yeah, that's what makes them better. Yeah.
Yeah, dogs, they know I don't have to say a word in the field. They know when I'm not happy. They know when I'm not happy with what they're doing. I don't have to do a thing. All I have to do is look at them.
Right.
And they know it. They absolutely know it. And again, when we train our dogs, we try and use not many words. We try and train them without a lot of verbiage, because the more you talk, the more they look at you and say, well, I'm done. I know the first three words. And after the first three, they go, I'm not listening anymore.
I'm laughing because my sister loves Boston Terriers, but she's not the type of person who should have a dog in her house. And when her Boston Terrier is like on a couch, she doesn't want him. She'll say, you know, his name and go, please get off the couch. And I'm like, you understand the dog doesn't speak English, right? It doesn't know what please is. It got one word there. It got off. And she'll do it like, please get off the couch now. I'm waiting. Please. And I'm like, dog heard off. That's it. Maybe dog heard off.
Yeah. It's amazing because we'll take dogs in the field. And I'll work with owners, and you'll hear them say, come, come, here, come, come, come here, here, Fido, get here. Come on, come hurry up. They'll say 47 words, and the only thing the dog heard was come.
Right.
And when it didn't come on the first one,
it's not coming.
It's going to come on the 40th. I mean,
that's so true.
So, I mean, if it does not do what it's supposed to do, and you discipline or you do what you're supposed to do, on the second one, it'll turn and come to you. On the 48th, it just says a lot of chatter.
Right. Oh, you want me to really come on the 38th one. Now I get it. Okay. Yeah. Why didn't you say that in the first place? How many dogs have you had in your life?
Let's see. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
That's great, man.
So I've had 10 or 11 dogs in my life from the time I was younger when I had German Shorthairs. I had one Springer Spaniel that was a wonderful dog, but he was gun-shy, and now Brittany's. Mm. And I've done Brittany's because of two things. One, their personalities are just beyond reproach. They're easy to work with for generally. They don't push the envelope. I've never seen a nasty one to a human. Mm. And very honestly, I like pointing dogs because I'm old. So when they go on point, I just say, hang on there for a minute. I'll be there. And once I get there, they're still sitting on point and the bird hopefully is still there.
So on point is the dog is telling you there's a bird here.
Yes.
Okay. I had a coonhound for a long time, and that dog could read. So smart. I swear to God. The smartest dog I ever knew. Just amazing. I think hunting dogs are the most intelligent. Is that right?
Well, I'm not saying they're most intelligent. Border collies are extremely intelligent. The herding breeds are very intelligent.
Mm,
they read things very well. But there are some breeds out there that are as dumb as a rock. but the gun dogs in general, are fairly astute. They learn very quickly.
You ever fox hunt?
I'm sorry? No, never fox hunt. Bear hunted with dogs.
You bear hunted?
Uh-huh. And that's extremely unbelievable. They turn these dogs loose, a pack of them, and these if you don't find a bear, you better catch these dogs at a cross point. They're all GPS because they are not coming back. There's no come here with those dogs. They're going to find a bear, and they're going to tree it, or they're going to be running around for weeks.
That's amazing. Did you get a bear?
GPS. You're riding around in a truck with a big GPS screen in front of you, noting where every dog is. It's kind of an amazing kind of thing.
Wow. Did you get a bear?
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah.
What's that like?
The shooting is very easy because usually what happens...
So big, right?
...turned up tree and a bear. The one I got was about 350 pounds.
Ho!
And he was shot out of a tree. And when he came down, it sounded like they were dropping a Volkswagen.
Yeah, man. Well, 350 pounds is a Volkswagen.
Yep.
Do you have a statue of it in your living room like this? Do you have a...
Yeah, I mean...
You do?
I didn't have a full mount. I've got a head mount, shoulder mount.
Oh, wow.
So.
Wow. What does... So you've had guns in your house your whole life, right?
I mean, my whole life.
Your whole life. And you never had a concern because, like, I see behind you, they're...
No. I've never had a concern. They're in safes. For the most part, unless I'm working on one or whatever. And I just have had no concerns at all. Nobody's getting into the safes. They're not going to take them out of my house.
Right.
We're not casual with them as far as leaving them everywhere.
Right.
So from that standpoint, I've not been worried at all.
Do you have those cool tweed jackets with the elbow patches?
Of course.
There it is.
You know, it's like... It's kind of like golf. So when you shoot lousy, at least you can look good.
Right. Yeah, I would submit that clay shooting is the best dressed sport.
There's no question. And if you are real English traditional, you're wearing probably $2,000 worth of clothing.
Wow. Are you that? Are you that?
No, 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 no. I am not that way at all.
But you do wear the jacket.
Correct. Correct.
Those are good looking jackets.
But, you know, if you have the knickers and the breeks and the everything else, you can spend a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you miss teaching?
I'm still teaching.
But I mean, in the school system.
I miss two things. I miss the kids I was very close to. And many of them I still have good relationships with. Dave Sipe, who's now the principal at Ketchum High School. I have a very good relationship with Dave, and I miss the people I worked with because they were great people. But one thing I am seeing this year that is a tremendous, you often think in your teaching career if you did it right and if you made a difference and if anybody even remembered they were in your damn class. And through this event, I've had former students contact me and want to be part of it and donate and do all kinds of things. Our event at the Hudson House, one of the owners is one of my former students, Charlie Ferry.
Oh, wow.
That's how that came about. I've just been in contact with the person who owns Pizza Margherita, Danny Greco, former student. He is helping us. Ian Lindars, who's a lawyer in the area, he is helping us. Big Nick, who's now the supervisor of the town of Fishkill, he's helping us. And it's all the people that I had in class. So it's something that I'm passionate about now that they see it, and it means something to them too. And it's gratifying to know that you must have done something right while you were there.
Yeah. Give my wife some advice. She's a third grade teacher. She's in Chappaqua. And
well, good district.
Sorry?
Good district.
Really good. Yeah, tough district. Very good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's got four more years to go. She's radically passionate about it. She works every day in the summer, or every weekday in the summer. She's always first one there. You can't, like, when I pick her up sometimes, you have to pull her out of the building. She won't leave. She works nights, she works weekends, but she's got four more years to go. Does she stay, or does she pull the trigger and go do something else and learn that there's more to life than teaching?
So if she's got something else she's passionate about, go do it.
But if she doesn't?
If she's going to sit home and watch TV, keep teaching.
There it is. Thank you very much. Okay, I will. What time is it? It's 42 minutes and 18 seconds. Okay, I'm marking that so I can play it for her. Does your wife shoot?
My wife does not, but she's now starting, and she wants to be a part of shooting over the top of the dogs because she loves the dogs.
Are you teaching her, or is somebody else teaching
her? No. Me teaching her? No way. I tried to teach her how to bowl, and I ended up leaving her at the bowling alley and driving home. So... No, I'm going to have one of my other buddy instructors take over that, and I'm not even going to be a part of that. You know, I've been married for 40-some years. I don't want to be divorced at 42.
What's the trick to that, 40-plus years?
Well, I had a principal at John Jay. His name is Joe Corgan, one of the best people in the entire universe. There's nobody better on this planet. And he met Judy one day at a football game, actually. And he said to Judy, "How do you guys do it? Tom's so damn busy. Tom's so damn busy. He's here, he's there, he's coaching, he's doing this, he's doing that. How do you do it?" And she said, "Well, I look at it this way. 40 weeks out of the year, I see him horizontal and in the dark, and that's how we get along."
I'm making that T-shirt. 40 weeks a year, horizontal and in the dark.
There it is. There it is.
That should, if you write a relationship book, or even that should be it. Or horizontal and in the dark. The key to a successful marriage.
Yep. Yep.
Did she like it before she started doing it, or like would she come and watch you shoot, or?
You know what? She loved teaching. She was a teacher too, special educator.
God bless.
I met her at another school, and I saw her teach for the first 6 or 8 months, and we had even dating at that time. And she was absolutely the best teacher I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
In what she got out of her students. And that's kind of what attracted me to her, because other people teach, and I saw how they taught and what they taught and what their passion was. And I did not see that in her. I saw she was the best of the best. And very honestly, when she can pick up on a dog and see the way the dog looks at me and know that behavior and say, the guy that's a professional and does it every single day is full of crap, that's something pretty special.
Yeah. So, well, I was going to ask you about that, because you basically can't win an argument for the rest of time.
Haven't done it for 46 years, so why should I start now?
Well, because, I mean, if she nailed Meg, like anything that happens after that, you can say, hey, how about not crashing the car into the side of the garage? And she can go, Meg, and you lose, right? Yep,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's unfair. It's a good advantage to have, but it's unfair. Are you going to stay in this area for the rest of your life too?
Yeah. I mean, we had thought about moving away, but I'm so entrenched with the dogs and the upland world and guiding and teaching clays and that kind of thing. I'm not one to kind of move away and sit on the lanai. I go out of my mind. So I have to be a part of something that I feel passionate about, and this is it. And this event, I keep saying, I'll do this event until no dog or human dies of cancer anymore.
There you go, man. God bless. There's so much research now. One thing that made me so curious about this when I was thinking about it is there's so much research now just about the benefit of being outside, period. Because we're never outside anymore. And things like hunting or clay shooting, like, force you to be outside for hours, if not days at a time. And the exposure to sunlight, it is fantastic for, I just learned this, it's fantastic for you in so many, but one way it is your body does things different during the day than it does at night. It digests differently. It releases, your autoimmune system is different during the day than it is at night.
Yeah.
But we're inside so much that our bodies don't know if it's day or night, because they don't have enough exposure to sunlight to be able to register, okay, today's, and that's how your body knows, is exposure to sunlight. Do you find that for yourself, that being outside?
In fact, it's funny you should say that, because I have people that I take out guiding. And at the end of the hunt, usually what they'll say to me is, I can't keep up. You know, that dog's on point and you're there and you're saying to me, come on, come on, come on, you got to come up, got to come up to the dog, got to come up to the dog. He goes, and they say, you're 75 years old and we can't keep up with you. Mm. And when I had the heart valve replaced, I was still guiding. And again, I could tell something was off because I couldn't do what I normally do. Hills became a problem, those kinds of things. And when I went down to Columbia Presbyterian and I had it done, the cardiac guy said to me, you know, you're pretty active. You know, you're doing things all the time. And I said, yeah, I haven't changed anything. I said, but I do notice this. He goes, well, that aortic valve is 92% blocked.
Whoa.
And he said, showed me on the ultrasound what it's supposed to be and showed me what mine was. And he said, if you weren't as active as you are, you would have had an incident years ago. Mm. Because your body has gotten used to functioning on 8% of oxygen instead of 92% of oxygen.
Wow.
And he said, you're getting away with it because you've been doing this for so long.
Right.
Because if you were a couch potato and sat in front of the TV, you'd have been dead already. So
how big a difference was it after the operation? Did you feel it like How much better did you feel when?
Well, I can tell you that after the valve replacement, and they did it on a procedure called TAVR, T-A-V-R, transaortic valve replacement, basically non-invasive. And I had to lay on my back for 6 hours after the operation because they go in through the femoral artery. They don't want to take a chance of a bleed. After those 6 hours, I could have run up a flight of stairs.
Really?
In fact, I had the operation, the procedure on Wednesday morning. I was released from the hospital at noontime on Thursday morning.
Right.
I was walking out of the hospital and got a call from Meshomic Preserve wanting to know if I could work dogs on Friday morning. I said yes, no problem. And I told Lisa at that point that I was walking out of the hospital after getting a valve replacement, and there was silence on the other end of the phone. She said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yeah, I'm fine."
Right.
And when I showed up at Meshomic on Friday morning, I was like 8 or 9 people, you know, people worked there and guides and that kind of thing in the room. And when I walked in the room, there was dead silence. Dead silence. Nobody,
that's crazy.
Nobody believed that I was going to be there.
Right. That's crazy.
So it's absolutely instantaneous when your body says, "Wow, I'm actually getting what I'm supposed to get."
Yeah. It's nice when my heart works. There's something to this. And this just happened to me in the last couple of weeks, but there's really something to this exercising outdoors. I work out 2 hours a day in a gym. I am in like really good gym shape. Like I take these intense classes and I work the hardest. I can lift what people 20 years my junior can. I'm 61 can lift. I'm in really good gym shape. I take the dog for a walk the other day. And we live on a big hill. And coming up the hill, I'm sucking wind. I'm like, how is this possible? It's a different kind of shape. It's probably a harder shape to get into.
You know, it's cardiovascular endurance and cardiovascular fitness versus gym fitness.
I do cardio all the time. But there's something about being outside and not having a treadmill, move with your feet. And it's a different – I can't explain it, but it's a – like I'm on this hill the other day walking the dog, and I'm like, how am I having to work to do this? I do 2 hours a day, but and I train for boxing, and like you would think, okay, train for boxing, like I can go 8 3-minute rounds. It's a different thing. It's so weird.
It is.
What was your favorite sport to coach?
Actually baseball, but I had a lot of success coaching soccer at John Jay. Did very well there. A lot of success. I had a lot of success coaching baseball also. And I had a lot of success coaching women's gymnastics.
Wow.
I coached both in high school, and I coached the University at Albany women's gymnastic team for about 5 years.
No kidding.
Yep.
Would you want to do that today, or is it too tricky today?
Not at all.
Too tricky, right?
I have to be honest with you. Coaching women versus coaching men is an entirely different entity.
Yeah.
Totally different. I'll give you a quick thing. When my soccer teams used to win championships, we used to buy them a cake.
Yeah.
And they'd eat the cake until it was done. When the women's soccer team that I coached won a championship, we'd buy them a cake, and they'd end up throwing it at each other. So, trust me, it's totally different. Totally different.
And it's so tricky today. Like, I wouldn't even, even if I liked doing it, I don't think I'd want to get myself in a position. Eventually, you're going
to. Yeah, the things that I did while I was coaching, you could never get away with today.
Yeah.
And very honestly, the things that you did back then, that's what the kids remember. They remember, they remember those things, those personal interactions that you made them laugh, or you poked a little fun at them, or you joked with them. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. When I was teaching, we used to have a gymnastic camp at Dutch Community College. A gentleman by the name of Dick Skimmon, who's director there, a fantastic guy, and a very close friend of mine. We had a little black girl in the class, and she was a doll, and I loved the kid. but she looked just like Stymie from The Little Rascals.
Rough.
Yeah.
That's rough. Yep.
So I used to call her Stymie.
Right.
And one day I got a call from Dick, and Dick says, do you have such and such in class? I said, yeah, why? He goes, are you calling her Stymie? I said, yeah, why? He goes, well, her parents objected to it. And I said, okay, I get it. So the next morning when I took attendance, I said, Sally Smith. Nobody answered. I said, Sally Smith. And I looked at her and I said, aren't you Sally Smith? And she looked at me and she goes, no, I'm Stymie.
Right.
So the kid understood where the love was. The parents right. didn't understand it.
Right.
And the kid understood that it was fondness that I was calling her, not some racial slur.
Right.
It was
right.
because
right.
I love the kid.
We, so my wife's, this is her 25th year. And early on in her career, she had a girl named Emily in her class, and, you know, and they bonded, and Emily had, she wasn't special needs, but she needed a lot of extra help. And so they got really close. So it became a tradition that Emily would, during the summer, go and help Trish, go to school and help Trish set up her classroom. And at the end of the year, take it down. When Emily was like 14, she started going on vacation with us. Her parents knew, like we go to Nantucket. Her, you know, she would come with us. My daughter's middle name is Emily after her. And she's still like a very, now she's in her 30s because my wife's really old, but now she's in her 30s. And, but we have like this amazing, she's family. We have this great relationship. You couldn't do that today.
Very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Very
yeah.
difficult.
That's, I think that's a sadness that we've had to, and I understand where it comes from, but it's a sadness that we've had to put so many fences around the teacher student relationship that, yep. Yeah.
And that's why this event is kind of really special to me, because number one, we'll have over 200 people show up. I'll know 150.
Mm.
I'll be able to walk in that place and know 150 people or more. I asked last year how many people have lost a dog to cancer, and probably 3/4 of the people raised their hand.
That's what I want.
They come for the right reasons. They're not coming because a corporate entity, you know, paid for 4 spots in the tournament. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a great thing because corporations support causes. But this is grassroots. This is people that I see every day at Mid-Hudson and I speak to. There are people that I've guided for. There are people that have called me with issues. There are people that I've helped their dogs. It's all the people that you see on a daily basis, and this means something to them more than just a sporting clay shoot, and that's what makes it special.
That's beautiful. Yeah. When I wanted to ask you, how did you know Meg had cancer? Because like dogs age, so like I wonder how many dogs aren't diagnosed because they just think, oh, you know, she's missing a step. She's 11 years old. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, she had a bump on one of her mammary glands.
Oh, okay.
So I knew that was there. And when we had a biopsy, we found it was cancer.
Do you think, though, that happens?
I'm sorry?
Do you think that happens, though? Like people that have dogs that are just getting older that have cancer but don't get treated because they just think, oh, my dog's just getting older. That's what it is.
Here's the sad part, and I'm not knocking anybody. Trust me. Vets in the area are extremely busy.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll see a dog that's 10 years old and they'll see a lump, they'll see a bump, and they'll either pass it off to another oncologist or pass it off to another entity. We as people often think of our dogs as tools. We don't think of them as parts of the family. So a dog gets to be 7, 8 years old, they find out the dog has a lump or a bump, they find out that it's cancer, and they basically decide kind of do nothing about it.
Right.
Third part of that equation is it's expensive.
Yeah, I was just about to ask that, yeah.
It's expensive. I spent well over $120,000 trying to keep Meg alive.
Wow.
And what happened was the insurance company that I had, Meg, all my dogs have insurance. They covered the first surgery. And then when the policy went to renew, they canceled it.
Yep.
You can't do that in humans, but you can do it in dogs.
You do it with dogs, yeah.
So I spent close to over $100,000 trying to keep Meg alive.
Man, God bless.
And honestly, I'd stand out in the corner with a cup.
Mm-hmm.
She was here for me today.
Yeah, yeah. It.
And that's one of the things we're trying to do with this shoot is help awareness.
Right.
Help. There is hope for a dog with cancer. And we have the avenues to get you hope if you want to pick up the phone and call. We have help if you can't afford it. We can push you into the right direction. And people don't know. And through this event and through what we do, we're going to try and end some of that. And through the research, we can find better ways to treat it, better ways to fix it. Part of our entity over the last 4 years was fund a linear LINAC at Cornell Ithaca. And it is the absolute most up-to-the-date, state-of-the-art radiation modality in New York State for dog cancer, human.
Right.
So that's why being out here with your podcast and trying to get some people to understand what we do, the relationship between canine and human cancer research. We find an awful lot with dogs that applies to human cancer research. You know, it's not just for Fido on the couch. It's for two-legged and four-legged. And kind of what we say is we're fighting for the dogs we love and the humans who love them.
Beautiful. I had one last theory I wanted to run by you. I'm basing my theory. First, I got to test this. I'm basing my theory on the premise that you can love a dog as much as you love a person. Do you agree with that?
More.
Okay. So the human love cycle is there's different modalities, right? There's a child and you love a child and the cycle is I know I'm going to pass before you. I'm never going to get to see you get old. And that's the way it should be. There's the romantic love cycle where we meet each other at the same time, like I meet you at the same time you meet me, and we both can kind of anticipate growing old together and passing at the same time, and we have that journey. There's like the friend cycle. That's kind of like the romantic love cycle where, you know, like you if you have a friend who's much older than you, you see them through that journey. If you have a friend who's much younger than you, you just kind of think, okay, well, I'm going to pass before you. I'm not going to see you get old. The strange or the magical thing about the love you have for a dog is if you take that dog as a pup like you did, you get to love something as much or not, if not more than a person, and you see it through the entire span. I saw you when you were young. There's no other experience of love that's like that.
Yeah. And it's unconditional. There's no conditions.
Yeah.
And I have professional trainer friends of mine who will argue with you that basically a dog is just needs. You feed it, they like you. You don't feed it, they don't like you.
Oh, no.
You know.
You're missing the point, man.
And those are the people who develop dogs as tools. My dogs are not tools. My dogs are part of the family. Yes, they have a job to do. And part of that job is what they were bred for.
Right.
They live to do what we do. I have friends of mine who, when dogs retrieve, some dogs love it, some dogs don't do it. Well, when you teach them to do that, when they don't know how to do it, once they learn it, it's the best thing in their absolute life. That's what they live to go find it and bring it back to you. That's what they live for. And sometimes to teach them that, they've got to go through a little bit of a rough spot. Right. And people will say, oh my God, I could never do that to my dog. Well, if I could say to the dog, hey dog, you're not going to like this for a couple of weeks. But once you learn this, you're going to think this is the best thing since socks.
Right.
If I could say that to them, they'd say, okay, put me through whatever you need to do.
Yep. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we can't do that. And we put that human element into this animal. And sometimes we can't do that.
Yeah. What's the biggest mistake people make just training house pets, not gun dogs, but like house pets? What's the biggest mistake people make?
There's no discipline. That's the biggest mistake. A dog wants discipline. A dog wants to go in his kennel and be in a kennel. I have people say to me, God, I got this new puppy and he just destroyed my couch. And I'd say, do you have a kennel? Does he kennel at night? What does he do? Oh, no, no, we just cordoned him off in the bathroom. Oh, what's he do in the bathroom? Well, he ate the toilet paper roll. He tore the shower curtain down. And I say to them, put him in a kennel. Oh, I could never put him in a kennel. My dog's kennels are their homes. They love it. I say to them, kennel. They're in a kennel. They just go in a kennel. It's their home. It's what they do. And right. What it does, it protects them from getting into trouble.
Right.
And they don't get into trouble. And everybody's happy when they don't get into trouble.
Right. Yep. No, I'm the same way. I we call it crating, but I
crate
dogs. Yeah, yeah, same thing. And you're right. It becomes their home, and you'll catch them in it even when you don't tell them to go.
Yeah.
I wanted to congratulate you, man. I just think it's really like taking the loss of people and Meg and turning that into something that and turning that into something beautiful. It takes a cool person to be able to suffer that hard and suffer that well. And I thought that should be noted.
Well, thank you very much. But, you know, I do this for Meg and her legacy. She accomplished so much in her lifetime that I want her to accomplish something in her passing. And this event is something really special. We work really hard on it. We like people to know about it, to support it, to come out, have lunch with us. You don't have to shoot, but you can come and party. You don't have to break clays, but if you go to our website, you can take and have a picture of a dog you lost come to our Garden of Remembrance. So,
wow.
300 people will see that dog's picture in our Garden of Remembrance and say, that was a dog that was lost, whether it be to cancer or whatever. And you can go to the website. You can get one of those pictures. It's not a lot of money. We have a sign made. We have a picture made. And that picture will go in our Garden of Remembrance. At the shooting, 300 people will see that dog.
Tell me about the website.
So the website is developed this year. We did not have a website before this. One of my shooting students and turned very good friend, Steve Jones's wife, said to me, and Steve, does the shoot have a website? And we said, no. And she said, do you want a website? And we said, well, maybe. And she said, if you want a website, I'll fund the website through my company. So she has funded that website. And on the website, you can find out dogs that we've helped, testimonials. You can find out the story of Meg. You can find out about how they dedicated an oncology room to Meg at Stanford, hospital in Stanford. You can find out about the goings on, the shoots. You can see people who have sponsored and donated. You can donate. You can buy a sign. You can buy a sign for your business. And again, we're not talking about millions of dollars. We're talking very minimal. But you can put your website or your business at our shoot. And you can also find out just simply how passionate we are about what we do. It's a special thing. It's not everybody. I know of nobody else in the country doing this. And Purina coming to us and saying, we want to be part of this, was a major deal because they don't get just involved with anybody.
Sure, sure.
They understood and they did their research and they found out through Cornell what we do and how we do it. And it was special to them. And it was nice of Purina as well as Double JK Ranch in Dover. They're one of our title sponsors. Mr. Art Landy is one of our title sponsors as well as Purina. And they all believe in the mission. They all believe in what we do. And they know that every dime goes to helping a dog and a human.
What's the website address?
www.caninecancershoot.com.
Okay, great. I'll put that in the blurb too. So yep.
www.caninecancershoot.com. We have testimonials of people we've helped who have called me. We have Meg's story almost from start to finish. You can see some of the things. And one of the things on there too is this. And that's Meg. And that locket will be with me till the day I die.
As it should, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
That makes sense. Thank you for doing this, man.
No, this is, as I said before, this is very hard to talk about. And when you talk about guns and you talk about cancer, it's two things that are very hard to talk about. And people affected by cancer, it's extremely difficult. They don't want to talk about it. And guns, we get the bad rap, but we do so much good.
Yeah.
The Dutch County Federation, they do 3,000 pounds of venison to hunters helping the hungry. They run veterans events. They run kids fishing days. They run a junior pheasant hunt that is absolutely the best in the state. There's nobody that comes close to the number of kids we put in the field on a Saturday afternoon in September. So everything we're associated with is quality, and we wanted to make this shoot that same quality. And then anybody who comes to it goes, oh, my God, it's spectacular. And it is a hell of a day. It really is.
Fantastic, man. So we did this now, and then we'll do another show with Trish maybe as we're closer to see if we can push some ticket sales. Does that work?
That would be wonderful.
Beautiful, and, man.
You can find out about the Pause to Party event, and you can go to the website. You can also go right to Hudson House. Hudson House has it on their event. You can buy tickets there. It's not an expensive event. Food all night, band, dancing. It's going to be just a lot of giveaways. Purina will be there. We're going to give away a bunch of stuff. And again, we want people to come and we want to thank them for what they do for this shoot and come and have a great night with not a lot of money, and hopefully help our mission.
Sounds good, man. Thank you so much for doing this. I'll try to get this up either today or tomorrow, and I'll email you when it's up so you know. And then we'll pick a date closer to the event again and do it again.
Thank you so much. The dogs appreciate it, the humans appreciate it, and everybody that's a part of this shoot appreciates it.
Oh, well, you're a wonderful man doing good stuff, man, so thank you. I'm hanging up on you, but I'm not hanging up on you. Hold on one second.